The irony about a codependent person is that while they're focusing excessively on someone else, they're actually absorbed in themselves. And one sign that someone is behaving in a codependent way toward you can be that you feel very irritated and invaded by their attempt to be connected to you. They hover, they get in your business, it feels impossible to have boundaries around them.
Hey, it's Anna here, just taking a little pause to talk about getting help when you're having a rough time. There are a lot of things you can try, and one of them is online therapy through BetterHelp. BetterHelp's mission is to make therapy more affordable and more accessible, and those are very good things, because finding a therapist can be really hard. BetterHelp makes it easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist who meets your criteria. And when you click the special link that I'm going to give you, it not only helps this podcast, but it gets you 10% off your first month of therapy. So you can connect with a therapist, see what happens, and if anything feels like it's not a fit, which is common in therapy, you can easily switch to a new therapist at no additional cost. No stress about insurance or who's in your network or anything like that. So if you're struggling and you need to talk to a human, try BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/CCF. CCF stands for Crappy Childhood Fairy. That's BetterHelp.com/CCF. There's also a link in the episode description if you need it. That might be easier. Thanks for sponsoring us, BetterHelp. Now, back to the show.
They say it's just because they love you, but something feels off. Sometimes codependency is an urge to fix you, but sometimes it's not about you at all. It's about them. And that's the dirty secret of codependency. It can actually be one face of self-centeredness. My letter today is from a woman I'll call Karen, and she writes, "Hi, Anna. It took me 30 years to understand that I was codependent. I'm turning 40 this year, and most of my life, I've been crap-fitting and giving time to painful friendships, relationships, and jobs." Whew, I've got my fairy pencil. I'm going to circle things I want to come back to for a second reading, but let's go through and find out what's going on for Karen. The last 10 years, I've been in recovery mode. During these years, I've found healthy friendships and a job, and they're guiding me toward better decisions. I'm living my happiest time. I'm now single and dating mindfully and slowly. There's still a subject in my life that I don't seem to get my head around, and I'm wondering if you can help. My dad got sober when I was 3, and I've considered myself very lucky. But when I understood that I was codependent, I realized that although there weren't visible addictions in the family, everything was still not over, despite my dad's sobriety. So I guess she's linking codependency to substance abuse. Okay, possible. My parents are nice people. They're friendly and welcoming, and I feel bad that I'm having trouble being around them. When I'm talking to people about this, many just shrug it off by saying that parents are always make their kids mad. But I'm not sure what to think of my situation, and I feel guilty for my feelings. The thing is, I'm an only child. I had unwanted power in my home growing up. As a kid, I once wrote in my diary that I felt like the dog that walks the owner and not the other way around. Everything revolved around me. Needless to say, I was spoiled. I had some boundaries like when to come home, but never had to clean my room or do any chores. As an only child, I felt lonely all my childhood and somehow unsafe. For some reason, I couldn't really trust my parents to be there for me. I'm still trying to figure out what really affected me as a kid. I'm one of those who had a happy childhood and still battled with mental health most of my life, mostly years of prolonged anxiety and panic attacks. My parents are retired and they live 4 hours away, 4-hour drive. I visit them every few months and I usually spend a weekend. My mom is clearly codependent toward me. In the past, I had to battle her to stop calling me every day, and the situation is still looming. When I visit, she circles around me like a fly. Her words, she thinks it's funny. She is an anxious person, and a few times I remember her panicky voice calling me like I had gone missing. I was in the bathroom. This sounds silly, but last time I ended up tiptoeing in the house to not let her know where I am so she wouldn't follow me around. I recently wanted to make them dinner, and while I was in the kitchen, she spent the whole time trying to read my thoughts, meaning every time I reached for something, she was there to hand me groceries she thought I needed, although I stated firmly multiple times that all I needed was time to think. She doesn't respect my boundaries, and I often feel like she doesn't really listen to me. And then again, it's really hard to keep my boundaries when I'm in their house. She's not the kind to be self-reflecting, so I don't think she can really change. My dad has been sober most of my life, and I feel closer to him than my mom. Although he's kind toward me, I think he has such low self-esteem that he needs extra appreciation all the time. That's interesting. You're trying to fix that for him. He needs extra appreciation all the time, but you automatically qualified it as it's because he has low self-esteem. He's the master of making everything about himself and still needing more. I find it hard to talk to him since he doesn't have the ability to hold a conversation, but everything turns to his monologue. I've seen the same behavior in many men his age. I guess it's a generation thing also. I can't help that all this shuts me down, and I've noticed I tend to develop a very dark, almost compulsive inner dialogue in their company that drains me more. I feel they pull me under every time I visit there, and I don't know what to do. I get dysregulated and shut down, and the last time got me in an active anxiety that lasted almost a week. In my past, I've battled periods of anxiety lasting for years. So it got me really worried. I'm feeling these dramatic feelings are something I shouldn't feel, since they are not bad people. Am I just so spoiled that I can't even realize how great a family I have? I've tried to talk to them, but it really hasn't led to anything, so my wish is to get on top of this on my own, but I really don't know how. The only thing that is constant is that I get really depressed, and I'm now concerned if another visit turns into prolonged anxiety. They're retired and still healthy, but I'm concerned about the future when they'll need my help more. Can you help? Oh, gosh. Karen, this sounds hard. My heart goes out to you. So let me go through what you told me, and I'll tell you what I observe here. You call yourself codependent. Maybe that's the word for it. I don't know. You're turning 40 this year. You've been crap-fitting to painful friendships and relationships and jobs this whole time, so you're not able to go for what you want. The last 10 years, you've been in recovery mode, so that's great. You're dating slowly. You're dealing with healthy people. Progress, very good. There's still a subject in my life that I don't seem to get my head around, and I'm wondering, okay. My dad got sober when I was 3, and I've considered myself very lucky. But when I understood that I was codependent, I realized that although there weren't visible addictions in my family, everything was still not over despite my dad's sobriety. Yeah, sometimes I think the word codependence is often used in different ways. And for some people, it's automatically, it's what you are if there was an addict or alcoholic in the family. And maybe that's the dynamic for you. He sounds like, though he doesn't drink, he still has some pretty negative characteristics. We'll talk about him in a minute. And so, you know, codependency develops as a result of neglect. So I guess what I want to posit to you, Karen, is that you had this great family and they're so nice, but they weren't... Your dad is completely sucked into himself and can't listen in monologues. Your mom hovers around. I expect she's lonely from being married to him, but she hovers around and she doesn't respect boundaries. She's very much like in her need. So she's not present for you either. And so in a sense, you are a neglected person. Your personhood is neglected here. And it would connect, you know, if you're like living a life of anxiety, you crap fit, you are following a pattern of people who are traumatized or neglected. I think neglect is an appropriate word. And then stifle it. Somehow there is not permission for you to just criticize this. And I'm not really talking about to their face, that's a separate decision, but just to admit, you know, it wasn't that great. Just because you weren't beaten, just because your dad wasn't actively drinking, doesn't mean you were emotionally cared for. When somebody hovers around, that is about them, it's not about you. And I just really notice that you see real patterns in people who were not seen by their parents, which could be the case even if overt abuse is happening or not. You're not seen, you're not being witnessed as a person. And that is so important to a kid's development, to get them to notice what they like, to give them space to make a choice here and there. And to this thing where they did everything for you. I don't know, your mom sounds, I get the impression, I don't know because I don't know the whole story, but I just get the impression she doesn't have much of a life or an identity outside of her family. And this husband who can't even talk to people and just talks about himself. That sounds really hard. So you're an only child. So you had all this focus on you and everything revolving around you. That's a lot of demand from a needy mom. And I hear the anxious energy. She's anxious. There's just anxiousness. Your dad drank there was some kind of thing going on in him that made drinking feel like a solution for a while, and then he stopped. Okay. And I don't know when you say sober, if you mean sober and in an active program of recovery. People who are in an active program of recovery will make a distinction. And somebody who's merely not drinking, but just carrying on with life and able to not drink, they might call that dry, which means the characteristics of alcoholism show up. And self-centeredness would definitely be one of the common characteristics of alcoholism. So you never know. But I'm here for you. We could think about them and diagnose them. I just hear that you're afraid to let them down and that you don't have a right to be angry. And when you say she won't respect your boundaries, I can't totally tell if you're like tiptoeing around the house, whether you're expressing your boundaries, but I believe you when you say she's not going to change or get it, no matter what you say. So now it sounds like you would like some time apart from them, that it's actually challenging your mental health to be around this. There's something to be said for what I call ninja boundaries. There are ways that this is an alternative. You can, I don't hear from you that you would like to cut off contact. You just need a way to cope with this without letting it get to you. And boy, do we hear you. We don't have CPTSD, around here because our families were all full of easy, great people who supported us. And many of us do want to have involvement in our families, but we need to do it in a way that doesn't drag us into anxiety, a huge period of dysregulation, depression. And those are all signs. If you feel depressed after you see them, whatever you call it or where it's from, it's real. You get depressed around them. And so I can imagine you've been in recovery, so you're having something like this in your life on your own, but where you start to develop who you are, your identity, and your confidence in your identity, so that when people are just like getting all in your head and trying to put groceries in your hand, that would bother me too. People helping. It's not helping. I just heard Dr. Phil or somebody say, I was scrolling, I was taking a break, saying helping people is doing things that they actually would like you to do, not putting things on them that they don't need or something to that effect. And I remember going, I thought about that. And that's what's happening to you, isn't it? She's not helping you, but they're sucking help out of you. That's for sure. I wonder if the relationship can be changed so that when you visit home, one of your boundaries is that it isn't a whole weekend. I hear that it's 4 hours, but you could just make it a day. Even if you have to stay in a motel for the night before or the night after or something, you hang out with a day for a day and then you go on. And it's just like a matter of quantity of time. It helps to prevent the bad consequence. You can check in on people, see how they're doing, help them repair the screen door or whatever is needed, and then get out of there with your sanity intact. Another thing you can do is support yourself. I call them ninja boundaries. So you can make a decision in advance. If they start doing this, I don't want to do that with them. I don't want to participate. And you think of gentle, almost invisible ninja ways that you don't get involved. So if someone's picking a fight with you about something, you just say, you're probably right. With your parents hovering or something, you're like, that's lovely, Mom. And then you find a reason to leave the room. And I hear you if she follows you around the house. I didn't really get a sense from you how much you articulated to her things like, Mom, you're following me, and it actually makes me uncomfortable, and could you please stop? I love you, but please don't follow me around the house. I will be back. So whatever's going on with her, it's a psychological thing, I guess. You say she can't respect your boundaries. Are you respecting your boundaries? Are you respecting your boundaries? And so a lot of times we don't really have a boundary if people just can walk all over what we said was required and we don't leave, we don't step away, there's no consequence. Then it's we who don't have a boundary. We've expressed a preference, but it's not a boundary. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm never a fan of getting all harsh with people if there's another way. You know, that's it. I cut you out. Don't ever call me again. There's a reason why that's not, you know, something we want to do. It may not be necessary. It's about you having boundaries. And the best boundaries, ninja boundaries, they're sneaky. Nobody really knows you're setting a boundary. So you tell them. At some point, I have to go run an errand or I'm going to go meet somebody. And no, I'm sorry, you can't come with me. I will be back, though. And you go. And even if they're standing there going, but, you go. And let them deal with their feelings. That's what a codependent does, is they have trouble anticipating that there will be negative pushback. And then when there is negative pushback, they can't handle it. They feel like they're bad people. And you have this here. You think you're a bad person. I do not hear you're a bad person. I hear you're struggling with boundaries with people who are kind of clueless about them, who aren't really there for you or really listening, that you're fulfilling a need for your mom and your dad. I don't even know. Maybe his need is just for somebody to be his audience. I don't know. Yeah, he's a master of making everything about himself and still needing more. I think people in the comments will tell you what the word for that is. I'll try to stay off that word. So you find it hard to talk to him, can't hold a conversation. And I have seen this behavior. You know, I do see that people who have these negative traits, if they don't countervail them and work on it, they do get worse with time. And I know what pattern you're talking about in certain older men, where they stop working on themselves, and then they just sort of go in, they know the answer to everything, they've got an opinion about everything. And after a while, you just get exhausted and give up. It's not a conversation. And I think there are, you know, different kinds of people, women, men. Obviously, they're not perfect categories, but there's other things, other ways that women can sort of keep going down the track of their, you know, the problem for them, the thing that's driving people away, and not come out of it. So I just want to praise you. You are working on it. You've done 10 years of recovery work. That's fantastic. You're building the tools. Part of any good recovery work always includes like self-reflection, self-evaluation. And that's what I like about you. You wrote, your letter is very reflective. You wrote to me, you're subjecting yourself to the whole internet coming on. And, you know, a few of them will just be like, I think she needs to cut off contact. And then I think she needs to be a nice daughter. And people will have their opinions. But I think most of us will hear you and have something about it that we can relate to and be on your side. We're on your side. If they can't change, it's your choice to decide. How can you have them in your life if you choose to? How can you have them in your life in a way that you can handle? And it sounds like the terms need to be renegotiated. If you really can't have that conversation, you can use this, I don't engage in the activities and the behaviors with them. I don't comment on them. I don't talk about them. I find a way to separate myself from that interaction very peacefully. Because with people who are very self-centered or prone to, you know, get yucky on you, it is yucky. It's this very like benign yuckiness, right? But with people who do that, it's often not worth it to tell them why you're taking a step back or even to make it obvious that you're trying to set a boundary. It just triggers them and then they start like doing what they do and it'll just ratchet up the behavior, right? For you, the goal here is to get out of it with your sanity intact. So a really important thing you can do is to have tools and friends. Friends who are right there on text, and you drive there, so that's good. You can take a drive out. I don't know if you go to 12-step meetings, but that's always a good excuse to get out of the house. Go, sorry, I have to go to a meeting, or I'm meeting a friend for coffee, you know? And you can say that. You can tell little white lies like that, because right now you're protecting your sanity, that your friend for coffee is you. That's your friend. And you just got to take care of yourself sometimes. And while you're taking a break, you can do this thing that I do called the daily practice. That's what I call it. And it's a very specific technique to write and release fearful and resentful thinking, which is not so that you can never be mad or have feelings. It's so that you can get the cluttery, unhelpful bleh out of your mind and start to have clear thoughts, even if that clear thought is that, you know what, I'm angry and I need to act on that. Or I'm angry and I've decided that I'm not going to deal with that right now. You have choices. Your choices appear when you have less fear and resentment. So when we do that writing, it's specific. So anybody listening, like, please take my free course, The Daily Practice. There'll be a link below and I'll connect you to it at the end of the video. But when you do that, it just can bring you back to yourself, more calm, more clear-headed. And if you do it regularly, you can transform out of the person who was driven by these symptoms like anxiety and depression. Depression was my problem when I started it, and it just helped me move forward so quickly. It also supported me while I made changes that take more time, you know, figuring things out by trial and error in my life, the dating, the jobs, the friendships. And it continues to support me today, and it helps me get up in the morning, and it helps me calm down at night. And so I'd love for everybody here to try it. You might want to try it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you love my content, think about joining my membership program. You can find out more information about that and all my courses and coaching programs in the episode description below or on my website, crappychildhoodfairy.com. If you're going through a hard time and you need online therapy, I encourage you to check out BetterHelp. They're easy and affordable, and they can connect you with someone you choose within a few days. And if you use this special URL, you not only help this channel, but you get 10% off your first month of therapy. So go to betterhelp.com/CCF, as in Crappy Childhood Fairy. That's betterhelp.com/CCF. And remember, healing is possible. People with childhood PTSD can have a wonderful life. Sometimes we just need a few workarounds. I'll see you next time.